Marilyn wiped the sleep from her eyes. James had already counted out the tip and taken the boxes and shut the door. She followed him dozily into the kitchen, where he put the pizza down right in the center of the table between Lydia and Nath.
"Your mother's home," he said,
as if they couldn't see her standing there in the doorway behind him. Marilyn touched a hand to her hair and felt frizz. Her braid had come undone. Her feet were bare. The kitchen was overly warm, overly bright. She felt like a child who'd overslept, wandering downstairs late to everything. Lydia and Nath stared at her warily across the table, as if she might suddenly do something unexpected, like scream or explode. Nath's mouth puckered, as if he were sucking something sour, and Marilyn wanted to stroke his hair and tell him that she hadn't planned any of this, hadn't meant for this to happen. She could see the question in their eyes.
"I'm home,"
she repeated, nodding. And they ran to hug her then, warm and solid, slamming into her legs, burying their faces in her skirt. One tear trickled down Nath's cheek. One ran along Lydia's nose, catching in her lips. Marilyn's hand burned and throbbed, as if she were holding a hot little heart in her palm.
"Were you good while I was away?" she asked, crouching on the linoleum beside them. "Did you behave?"
To Lydia, her mother's return was nothing short of a miracle. She had made a promise, and her mother had heard it and come home. She would keep her word. That afternoon, when her father had hung up the phone and said those astonishing words, "Your mother is coming home," she had made a decision. Her mother would never have to see that sad cookbook again. At Mrs. Allen's, she had made a plan, and after her father had picked them up, "Shh, not a peep. Your mother is sleeping," she had taken it away.
"Mama,"
she said into her mother's hip now,
"while you were gone, your cookbook,"
she swallowed.
"I lost it."
"You did?" To her astonishment, Marilyn felt no anger. No, she felt pride. She pictured her daughter tossing the cookbook onto the grass and stomping it into the mud with her shiny Mary Janes and walking away. Tossing it into the lake, setting it ablaze. To her own surprise, she smiled.
"Did you do that?"
she said, curling her arm around her small daughter. And Lydia hesitated, then nodded. It was a sign, Marilyn decided. For her it was too late, but it wasn't too late for Lydia. Marilyn would not be like her own mother, shunting her daughter toward husband and house, a life spent safely behind a deadbolt. She would help Lydia do everything she was capable of. She would spend the rest of her years guiding Lydia, sheltering her, the way you tended a prize rose, helping it grow, propping it with stakes, arching each stem toward perfection. In Marilyn's belly, Hannah began to fidget and kick, but her mother could not yet feel it. She buried her nose in Lydia's hair and made silent promises. Never to tell her to sit up straight, to find a husband, to keep a house. Never to suggest that there were jobs or lives or worlds not meant for her. Never to let her hear doctor and think only man. To encourage her for the rest of her life to do more than her mother had. "All right," she said, releasing her daughter at last. "Who's hungry?" James was already taking plates from the cupboard, distributing napkins, lifting the lid of the top box in a whiff of meat-scented steam. Marilyn put a slice of pepperoni pizza on each of their plates, and Nath, with a deep, contented sigh, began to eat.
His mother was home. And tomorrow there would be hard-boiled eggs for breakfast, hamburgers and hot dogs for supper, strawberry shortcake for dessert. Across the table, Lydia stared down at her portion in silence, at the red circles dotting the surface, at the long, thin threads of cheese tying it back to the box. Nath was only half right. The next day, there were hot dogs and hamburgers, but no eggs, no shortcake. James grilled the meat himself, charring it slightly, but the family, determined to celebrate, ate it anyway. In fact, Marilyn would refuse to cook at all after her return, each morning popping frozen waffles into the toaster, each evening heating a frozen pot pie or opening a can of SpaghettiOs. She had other things on her mind. Math, she thought that 4th of July. She will need math, this daughter of mine. How many buns inside the bag? She asked, and Lydia tapped each with her finger, counting up. How many hot dogs are on the grill? How many won't have buns? At each right answer, her mother smoothed her hair and cuddled her against her thigh. All day, Lydia added up. If everybody ate one hot dog, how many would be left over for tomorrow? If she and Nath got 5 sparklers each, how many would they have altogether? By the time dark fell and fireworks blossomed in the sky, she counted 10 kisses from her mother, 5 caresses, 3 times her mother called her my smart girl. Every time she answered a question, a dimple appeared in her mother's cheek like a little fingerprint. Another, she begged, every time her mother stopped. Mama, ask me another. If that's really what you want, her mother said, and Lydia nodded. Tomorrow, Marilyn said, I'll buy you a book and we'll read it together. Instead of just one book, Marilyn bought a stack. The Science of Air, Why There Is Weather, Fun with Chemistry. At night, after she tucked Nathan, she perched on the edge of Lydia's bed and lifted one from the top. Lydia huddled against her, listening to the deep underground drum of her mother's heartbeat. When her mother breathed in, she breathed in. When her mother breathed out, she breathed out. Her mother's voice seemed to come from within her own head. Air is everywhere, her mother read. Air hovers all around you. Though you can't see it, it is still there. Everywhere you go, air is there. Lydia snuggled deeper into her mother's arms, and by the time they reached the last page, she was almost asleep. Read me another, she murmured, and when Marilyn, thrilled, whispered, tomorrow, all right? Lydia nodded so hard her ears rang. That most important word, tomorrow. Every day, Lydia cherished it. Tomorrow, I'll take you to the museum to look at the dinosaur bones. Tomorrow, we'll learn about trees. Tomorrow, we'll study the moon. Every night, a small promise extracted from her mother. That she would be there in the morning. And in return, Lydia kept her own promise. She did everything her mother asked. She learned to write the plus sign, like a little stunted T. She counted on her fingers every morning, adding up over the cereal bowl. 4 plus 2, 3 plus 3, 7 plus 10. Whenever her mother stopped, she asked for more, which made her mother glow, as if Lydia had flicked on a light. She stood on the step stool over the sink, aproned from neck to ankle and pinched baking soda into a jar of vinegar. That's a chemical reaction, her mother said, and Lydia nodded as the foam gurgled down the drain. She played store with her mother, making change with pennies and nickels, 2 cents for a hug, 4 cents for a kiss. When Nath plunked down a quarter and said, "Bet you can't do that one," their mother shooed him away. Inside, Lydia could feel it. Everything that was to come. One day the books would have no pictures. The problems would grow longer and harder. There would be fractions, decimals, exponents. The games would get trickier. Over meatloaf, her mother would say, "Lydia, I'm thinking of a number. If you multiply by 2 and add 1, you get 7. She would count her way back until she got the right answer, and her mother would smile and bring in the dessert. One day, her mother would give her a real stethoscope. She would undo the top 2 buttons of her blouse and press the chest piece to her skin, and Lydia would hear her mother's heart directly. "Doctors use these," her mother would say. It was far away then, tiny in the distance, but Lydia already knew it would happen. The knowledge hovered all around her, clinging to her, every day getting thicker. Everywhere she went, it was there. But every time her mother asked, she said, "Yes, yes, yes." 2 weeks later, Marilyn and James drove to Toledo to retrieve her clothes and books. "I can go alone," Marilyn insisted. By then, the marble and the barrette and the button nestled quietly, forgotten, in the pocket of her dress in the closet. Already the dress was growing tight, and soon Marilyn would give it away to Goodwill, with her tiny, forgotten talismans still tucked inside. Still, her eyes stung at the thought of emptying that apartment. Sealing her books back into cartons, tossing her half-filled notebooks into the rubbish. She wanted privacy for this little funeral. "Really," she said, "you don't have to come." James, however, insisted.
"I don't want you lifting anything heavy in your condition," he said. "I'll ask Vivian Allen to stop by and watch the kids for the afternoon."
As soon as James and Marilyn had gone, Mrs. Allen turned the TV to a soap opera and sat down on the couch. Lydia hugged her knees under the dining table, cookbookless. Nath picked lint from the carpet and glowered. His mother woke him up and tucked him in, but Lydia filled up all the spaces in between. He knew the answer to every question their mother asked, but whenever he tried to jump in, she shushed him while Lydia counted on her fingers. At the museum, he wanted to watch the star show in the planetarium, but they spent the whole day looking at the skeletons, the model of the digestive system, whatever Lydia wanted. That very morning, he had come down to the kitchen early, clutching his folder of news clippings, and his mother, still in her bathrobe, gave him a sleepy smile over the rim of her teacup. It was the first time she had really looked at him since she came home. And something fluttered in his throat like a little bird.
"Can I have a hard-boiled egg?" he asked.
And like a miracle, she said, "All right." For a moment, he forgave her everything. He decided he would show her the pictures of the astronauts he'd been collecting, his lists of launches, everything. She would understand them. She would be impressed. Then, before he could say a word, Lydia padded down the steps, and his mother's attention flitted away and alighted on Lydia's shoulders. Nath pouted in the corner, flicking the edges of his folder, but no one paid any attention to him until his father came into the kitchen.
"Still mooning over those astronauts?"
he said, plucking an apple from the fruit bowl on the counter. He laughed at his own joke and bit into the apple. And even across the kitchen, Nath had heard the hard crunch of teeth piercing skin. His mother, listening to Lydia recount last night's dream, had not. She had forgotten all about his egg. The little bird in his throat had died and swelled so that he could hardly breathe. On the couch, Mrs. Allen let out a little stuttering snore. A thread of spit oozed down her chin. Nath headed outside, leaving the front door half open. and jumped down off the porch. The ground slammed into his heels like a jolt of electricity. Above him, the sky stretched out pale steel gray.
"Where are you going?"
Lydia peeked around the door.
"None of your business."
He wondered if Mrs. Allen would hear, if she would wake and come out and call them back. But nothing happened. Without looking, he knew Lydia was watching, and he strode right down the middle of the street, daring her to follow. And in a moment, she did. She followed him all the way to the lake and to the end of the little pier. The houses on the other side of the water looked like dollhouses, tiny and scaled down and perfect. Inside, mothers were boiling eggs or baking cakes or making pot roasts. Or maybe fathers were poking the coals in the barbecue, turning the hot dogs with a fork so that the grill made perfect black lines all over. Those mothers had never gone far away and left their children behind. Those fathers had never slapped their children or kicked over the television or laughed at them.
"Are you going swimming?"
Lydia peeled off her socks and tucked one in each shoe, then perched at the end of the dock beside him, dangling her feet over the edge. Someone had left a Barbie doll in the sand, naked and muddy, one of its arms gone. Nath pried off the other and threw it into the water. Then the leg, which was harder. Lydia began to fidget.
"We better go home."
"In a minute."
In his hands, the head of the Barbie had turned around to face her back.
"We'll get in trouble."
Lydia reached for a sock. The other leg wouldn't come off, and Nath turned on his sister. He felt himself unsteady, struggling for balance, as if the world had tipped to one side. He did not know exactly how it had happened, but everything had gone askew, like a teeter-totter unevenly weighted. Everything in their life, their mother, their father, even he himself, slid now toward Lydia. Like gravity, there was no resisting it. Everything orbited her. Later on, Nath would never be able to disentangle what he said and what he thought or what he only felt. He would never be sure whether he said anything at all. All Nath would know for sure was this. He pushed Lydia into the water. Whenever he remembered this moment, it lasted forever. A flash of complete separateness as Lydia disappeared beneath the surface. Crouched on the dock, he had a glimpse of the future. Without her, he would be completely alone. In the instant after, he knew it would change nothing. He could feel the ground still tipping beneath him. Even without Lydia, the world would not level. He and his parents and their lives would spin into the space where she had been. They would be pulled into the vacuum she left behind. More than this, the second he touched her, he knew that he had misunderstood everything. When his palms hit her shoulders, when the water closed over her head, Lydia had felt relief so great she had sighed in a deep, choking lungful. She had staggered so readily, fell so eagerly, that she and Nath both knew. That she felt it too, this pull she now exerted, and didn't want it. That the weight of everything tilting toward her was too much. In reality, it was only a few seconds before Nath jumped into the water. He ducked under, grabbed Lydia's arm, pulled her to the surface, pedaling furiously. "Kick," he gasped. "Kick, kick!" They floundered their way to the edge of the lake, moving slowly toward the shallows until their feet hit the sandy bottom and they lurched aground. Nath wiped mud from his eyes. Lydia vomited a mouthful of lake water into the grass. For a minute, two, three, they lay face down, catching their breath. Then Nath pushed himself to his feet, and to his surprise, Lydia reached up to clutch his hand. "Don't let go," she meant. And dizzy with gratitude, Nath gave it. They trudged home in silence, making damp sludges on the sidewalk. Except for Mrs. Allen's snores, there was no noise but the sound of water dripping from their clothes to the linoleum. They had been gone only 20 minutes, but it felt as though eons had passed. Quietly, they tiptoed upstairs and hid their wet clothes in the hamper and put on dry, and when their parents returned with suitcases and boxes of books, they said nothing. When their mother complained about the water spots on the floor, Nath said he had spilled a drink. At bedtime, Nath and Lydia brushed their teeth sociably at the sink, taking turns to spit, saying goodnight as if it were any other night. It was too big to talk about what had happened. It was like a landscape they could not see all at once. It was like the sky at night, which turned and turned so they couldn't find its edges. It would always feel too big. He pushed her in, and then he pulled her out. All her life, Lydia would remember one thing. All his life, Nath would remember another. Middlewood Elementary held its annual Welcome Back picnic on the last weekend in August. Their mother pressed one hand to her belly, where Hannah grew heavier every day. Their father carried Lydia on his shoulders as they walked across the parking lot. After lunch, there were contests. Who could hit a wiffle ball the farthest? Who could toss the most bean bags into a coffee can? Who could guess the number of jelly beans in the 1 gallon mason jar? Nath and James entered the father-son egg race, each balancing a raw egg and a teaspoon like an offering. They made it almost all the way to the finish line before Nath tripped and dropped his. Miles Fuller and his father crossed the line first, and Mrs. Hugard, the principal, gave them the blue ribbon.
"It's okay," James said.
And for a moment, Nath felt better. Then his father added,
"Now, if they had a contest for reading all day."
All month he had been saying things like this. Things that sounded like jokes, but weren't. Every time, as he heard his own voice, James bit the tip of his tongue too late. He did not understand why he said these things to Nath, for that would have meant understanding something far more painful. But Nath reminded him more and more of himself, of everything he wanted to forget from his own boyhood. He knew only that it was becoming a reflex, one that left him smarting and ashamed, and he glanced away. Nath looked down at his broken egg, yolk trickling between blades of grass, whites seeping into the soil. Lydia gave him a small smile, and he ground the shell into the dirt with his sneaker. When his father turned his back, Nath spat into the lawn at his feet. And then came the three-legged race. A teacher looped a handkerchief around Lydia's and Nath's ankles, and they hobbled to the starting line, where other children were tethered to their parents, or to siblings, or to each other. They had hardly begun to run when Lydia caught the edge of Nath's shoe under her own and stumbled. Nath threw an arm wide for balance and wobbled. He tried to match Lydia's stride, but when Lydia swung her leg forward, Nath pulled back. The handkerchief around their ankles was tied so tight their feet throbbed. It didn't loosen, yoking them together like mismatched cattle. And it didn't come undone, even when they jerked in opposite directions and tumbled face forward onto the soft, damp grass. 7. 10 years later, it had still not come undone. Years passed. Boys went to war, men went to the moon, presidents arrived and resigned and departed. All over the country, in Detroit and Washington and New York, crowds roiled in the streets, angry about everything. All over the world, nations splintered and cracked. North Vietnam, East Berlin, Bangladesh. Everywhere things came undone. But for the Lees, That knot persisted and tightened, as if Lydia bound them all together. Every day, James drove home from college, where he taught his cowboy class term after term after term, until he could recite the lectures word for word, mulling over the slights of the day, how two little girls, hopscotching on the corner, had seen him break at the stop sign and thrown pebbles at his car, how Stan Hewitt had asked him the difference between a spring roll and an egg roll, how Mrs. Allen had smirked when he drove past. Only when he reached home and saw Lydia did the bitter smog dissipate. For her, he thought, everything would be different. She would have friends to say, "Don't be an idiot, Stan. How the hell would she know?" She would be poised and confident. She would say, "Afternoon, Vivian," and look right at her neighbors with those wide blue eyes. Every day, the thought grew more precious. Every day, as Marilyn unboxed a frozen pie or defrosted a Salisbury steak, for she still refused to cook, and the family quietly accepted this as the price of her presence, she made plans. Books she would buy Lydia, science fair projects, summer classes. "Only if you're interested," she told Lydia every time. "Only if you want to." She meant it every time, but she did not realize she was holding her breath. Lydia did. "Yes," she said, every time. "Yes, yes." And her mother would breathe again. In the newspaper, which between loads of washing Marilyn read front to back, metering out the day, section by section, she saw glimmers of hope. Yale admitted women. Then Harvard. The nation learned new words. Affirmative action. Equal rights amendment. Ms. In her mind, Marilyn spun out Lydia's future in one long golden thread. The future she was positive her daughter wanted, too. Lydia in high heels and a white coat, a stethoscope round her neck. Lydia bent over an operating table, a ring of men awed at her deft handiwork. Every day it seemed more possible. Every day, at the dinner table, Nath sat quietly while his father quizzed Lydia about her friends, while his mother nudged Lydia about her classes. When they turned, dutifully, to him, he was tongue-tied, because his father, still seared by the memory of a smashed television and his son's slapped face, did not ever want to hear about space. And that was all Nath read or thought about. In his spare moments, he worked his way through every book in the school card catalog. Space flight. Astrodynamics. See also combustion, propulsion, satellites. After a few stuttering replies, the spotlight would swivel back to Lydia, and Nath would retreat to his room in his aeronautics magazines, which he stashed under his bed like pornography. He did not mind this permanent state of eclipse. Every evening, Lydia rapped at his door, silent and miserable. He understood everything she did not say, which at its core was, "Don't let go." When Lydia left, to struggle over her homework or a science fair project, he turned his telescope outward, looking for faraway stars, far-off places where he might one day venture alone. And Lydia herself, the reluctant center of their universe, every day she held the world together. She absorbed her parents' dreams, quieting the reluctance that bubbled up within. Years passed. Johnson and Nixon and Ford came and went. She grew willowy. Nath grew tall. Creases formed around their mother's eyes. Their father's hair silvered at the temples. Lydia knew what they wanted so desperately, even when they didn't ask. Every time, it seemed such a small thing to trade for their happiness. So she studied algebra in the summertime. She put on a dress and went to the freshman dance. She enrolled in biology at the college, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, all summer long.
Yes, yes, yes.
What about Hannah?
They set up her nursery in the bedroom in the attic, where things that were not wanted were kept. And even when she got older, now and then each of them would forget, fleetingly, that she existed. As when Marilyn, laying 4 plates for dinner one night, did not realize her omission until Hannah reached the table. Hannah, as if she understood her place in the cosmos, grew from quiet infant to watchful child. A child fond of nooks and corners, who curled up in closets, behind sofas, under dangling tablecloths, staying out of sight as well as out of mind, to ensure the terrain of the family did not change. A decade after that terrible year, everything had turned upside down. For the rest of the world, 1976 was a topsy-turvy time too, culminating in an unusually cold winter and strange headlines. Snow falls on Miami. Lydia was 15 and a half, and winter break had just begun. In 5 months, she would be dead. That December, alone in her room, she opened her book bag and pulled out a physics test with a red 55 at the top. The biology course had been hard enough, but by memorizing kingdom, phylum, and class, she'd passed the first few tests. Then, as the course got tougher, she had gotten lucky. The boy who sat to her right studied hard, wrote large, and never covered up his answers. "My daughter," Marilyn had said that fall to Mrs. Wolf, Dr. Wolf, "is a genius. An A in a college class, and the only girl, too." So Lydia had never told her mother that she didn't understand the Krebs cycle, that she couldn't explain mitosis. When her mother framed the grade report from the college, she hung it on her wall and pretended to smile. After biology, Marilyn had other suggestions. "We'll skip you ahead in science this fall," she'd said. "After college biology, I'm sure high school physics will be a snap." Lydia, knowing this was her mother's pet subject, had agreed.
"You'll meet some of the older students," her father had told her, "and make some new friends."
He'd winked, remembering how at Lloyd, older had meant better. But the juniors all talked to each other, comparing French translations due next period or memorizing Shakespeare for the quiz that afternoon. To Lydia, they were merely polite, with the distant graciousness of natives in a place where she was a foreigner. And the problems about car crashes, shooting cannons, skidding trucks on frictionless ice. She couldn't make the answers turn out. Race cars on banked tracks, roller coasters with loops, pendulums and weights, around and around, back and forth she went. The more she thought about it, the less sense it made. Why didn't the race cars tip over? Why didn't the roller coaster fall from its track? When she tried to figure out why, gravity reached up and pulled down the cars like a trailing ribbon. Each night when she sat down with her book, the equations, studded with K and M and theta, seemed pointed and dense as brambles. Above her desk, on the postcard her mother had given her, Einstein stuck out his tongue. Each test score had been lower than the last, reading like a strange weather forecast. 90 in September, mid-80s in October, low-70s in November, 60s before Christmas. The exam before this one, she'd managed a 62, technically passing, but hardly passable. After class, she'd shredded it into penny-sized scraps and fed it down the third-floor toilet before coming home. Now, there was the 55, which like a bright light made her squint, even though Mr. Kelly hadn't written the F at the top of the page. She'd stashed it in her locker for 2 weeks under a stack of textbooks, as if the combined weight of algebra and history and geography might snuff it out.
Mr. Kelly had been asking her about it, hinting that he could call her parents himself if necessary. And finally, Lydia promised to bring it back after Christmas break with her mother's signature. All her life, she had heard her mother's heart drumming one beat. Doctor, doctor, doctor. She wanted this so much, Lydia knew, that she no longer needed to say it. It was always there. Lydia could not imagine another future, another life. It was like trying to imagine a world where the sun went around the moon, or where there was no such thing as air. For a moment, she considered forging her mother's signature, but her handwriting was too round, too perfectly bulbous, like a little girl's script. It would fool no one. And last week, something even more terrifying had happened. Now, from under her mattress, Lydia extracted a small white envelope. Part of her hoped that somehow it would have changed, that over the past 8 days the words would have eroded so she could blow them away like soot, leaving nothing but a harmless blank page. But when she blew, just one quick puff, the paper quivered. The letters clung. Dear Mr. Lee, we thank you for your participation in our new early admission process and are very pleased to welcome you to the Harvard class of 1981. For the past few weeks, Nath had checked the mail every afternoon, even before he said hello to their mother, sometimes before he took off his shoes. Lydia could feel him aching to escape so badly that everything else was falling away. Last week at breakfast, Marilyn had leaned Lydia's marked-up math homework against the box of Wheaties. "I checked it last night after you went to bed," she said. "There's a mistake in number 23, sweetheart. 5 years, a year, even 6 months earlier, Lydia would have found sympathy in her brother's eyes." "I know, I know." Confirmation and consolation in a single blink. This time, Nath, immersed in a library book, did not notice Lydia's clenched fingers, the sudden red that rimmed her eyes. Dreaming of his future, he no longer heard all the things she did not say. He had been the only one listening for so long. Since their mother's disappearance and return, Lydia had been friendless. Every recess that first fall, she had stood to the side, staring at the first federal clock in the distance. Each time a minute ticked by, she squeezed her eyes shut and pictured what her mother might be doing, scrubbing the counter, filling the kettle, peeling an orange. As if the weight of all those details could keep her mother there. Later, she would wonder if this had made her miss her chance, or if she had ever had a chance at all. One day, she had opened her eyes and found Stacy Sherwin standing before her. Stacy Sherwin of the waist-long golden hair, surrounded by a gaggle of girls. In Middlewood's kindergarten class, Stacy Sherwin was the kingmaker, already adept at wielding her power. A few days earlier, she had announced, "Janine Collins stinks like garbage water," and Janine Collins had peeled away from the group, ripping her glasses from her tear-smudged face, while the other girls in Stacy's coterie tittered. Lydia, from a safe distance, had watched this unfold with awe. Only once, on the first day of kindergarten, had Stacy spoken to her directly. "Do Chinese people celebrate Thanksgiving?" And, "Do Chinese people have belly buttons?" "We're all going over to my house after school," Stacy said now. Her eyes flicked briefly to Lydia's, then slid away. "You could come too." Suspicion flared in Lydia. Could she really have been chosen by Stacy Sherwin? Stacy kept looking at the ground and wound a ribbon of hair around her finger, and Lydia stared, as if she might be able to see right into Stacy's mind. Shy or sly? She couldn't tell. And she thought then of her mother, her face peering through the kitchen window, waiting for her to arrive.
"I can't," she said at last.
"My mom said I have to come straight home."
Stacy shrugged and walked away, the other girls trailing behind her. In their wake came a swell of sudden laughter, and Lydia could not tell if she had been left out of the joke or if she had been the joke herself.
Would they have been kind to her or mocked her? She would never know. She would say no to birthday parties, to roller skating, to swimming at the rec center, to everything. Each afternoon she rushed home, desperate to see her mother's face, to make her mother smile. By the second grade, the other girls stopped asking. She told herself she didn't care. Her mother was still there. That was all that mattered.
In the years to come, Lydia would watch Stacy Sherwin, her golden hair braided, then ironed flat, then feathered, waving to her friends, pulling them toward her, the way a rhinestone caught and held the light. She would see Jen Pittman slip a note to Pam Saunders, and see Pam Saunders unfold it beneath her desk and snicker. She would watch Shelley Brierly share out a pack of double mint and breathe in the sugar spearmint scent as the foil-wrapped sticks passed her by. Only Nath had made it bearable all that time. Every day since kindergarten, he saved her a seat. In the cafeteria, a chair across the table from him. On the bus, his books placed beside him on the green vinyl seat. If she arrived first, she saved a seat for him. Because of Nath, she never had to ride home alone while everyone else chatted sociably in pairs. She never needed to gulp out, "Can I sit here?" and risk being turned away. They never discussed it, but both came to understand it as a promise. He would always make sure there was a place for her. She would always be able to say, "Someone is coming. I am not alone." Now Nath was leaving. More letters were on their way. "In a few days, we will send a packet of information and forms should you choose to accept your place."
Still, for a moment, Lydia allowed herself to fantasize, slipping the next letter out of the mail pile, and the next, tucking them between mattress and box spring where Nath couldn't find them, so that he would have no choice but to stay. Downstairs, Nath riffled through the pile of mail. A grocery circular, an electric bill. No letter. That fall, when the guidance counselor had asked Nath about his career plans, he had whispered as if telling her a dirty secret.
"Space," he'd said. "Outer space."
Mrs. Hendrick had clicked her pen twice, in, out. And he thought she was going to laugh. It had been nearly 5 years since the last trip to the moon, and the nation, having bested the Soviets, had turned its attention elsewhere. Instead, Mrs. Hendrick told him there were two routes: become a pilot or become a scientist. She flipped a folder open to his printed-out transcript. B-minus in phys ed, A-plus in trigonometry, calculus, biology, physics. Though Nath dreamed of MIT or Carnegie Mellon or Caltech, he'd even written for pamphlets, he knew there was only one place his father would approve: Harvard. To James, anything else was a failing. Once he got to college, Nath told himself, he would take advanced physics, material science, aerodynamics. College would be a jumping-off point for a million places he had never been, a stop-off at the moon before shooting into space. He would leave everything and everyone behind. And though he wouldn't admit it to himself, everyone meant Lydia, too. Lydia was 15 now, taller, and at school, When she tied her hair up and put on lipstick, she looked grown up. At home, she looked like the same startled 5-year-old who had clung to his hand as they crawled back ashore. When she stood near, the little girl scent of her perfume, even its name childish, baby soft, wafted from her skin. Ever since that summer, he had felt something still binding their ankles and tugging him off balance, fettering her weight to his. For 10 years, that something had not loosened, and now it had begun to chafe. All those years, as the only other person who understood their parents, he had absorbed her miseries, offering silent sympathy or a squeeze on the shoulder or a wry smile. He would say,
"Mom's always bragging about you to Dr. Wolf. When I got that A+ in chem, she didn't even notice."
Or, "Remember when I didn't go to the 9th grade formal? Dad said, well, I guess if you can't get a date." He had buoyed her up with how too much love was better than too little.
All that time, Nath let himself think only, "When I get to college."
He never completed the sentence. But in his imagined future, he floated away untethered. It was almost Christmas now, and still no letter from Harvard. Nath went into the living room without turning on the lamp, letting the colored lights on the tree guide his way. Each blackened window pane reflected back a tiny Christmas tree. He would have to type new essays and wait for a second or third or fourth choice. Or maybe he'd have to stay home forever. His father's voice carried from the kitchen.
"I think she'll really like it. As soon as I saw it, I thought of her."
No need for an antecedent. In their family, she was always Lydia. As the Christmas lights blinked on and off, the living room appeared dimly, then disappeared again. Nath closed his eyes when the lights came on, opened them as they went off, so that he saw only uninterrupted darkness. Then the doorbell rang. It was Jack, not yet suspicious in Nath's eyes, only long distrusted and disliked. Though it was below freezing, he wore just a hooded sweatshirt, half-zipped over a t-shirt Nath couldn't quite read. The hems of his jeans were frayed and damp from the snow. He pulled his hand from his sweatshirt pocket and held it out. For a moment, Nath wondered if he was expected to shake it. Then he saw the envelope pinched between Jack's fingers.
"This came to our house," Jack said. "Just got home and saw it."
He jabbed his thumb at the red crest in the corner.
"I guess you'll be going to Harvard then."
The envelope was thick and heavy, as if puffed with good news.
"We'll see," Nath said. "It might be a rejection, right?"
Jack didn't smile.
"Sure," he said with a shrug. "Whatever."
Without saying goodbye, he turned home, crushing a trail of footprints across the Lees' snowy yard. Nath shut the door and flipped on the living room light, weighing the envelope in both hands. All of a sudden, the room felt unbearably hot. The flap came up in a ragged tear, and he yanked out the letter, crumpling its edge.
"Dear Mr. Lee, let us once again congratulate you on your early admission to the class of 1981.
His joints went loose with relief.
"Who was it?"
Hannah, who had been listening from the hallway, peeked around the doorframe.
"A letter,"
Nath swallowed.
"From Harvard."
Even the name tingled on his tongue. He tried to read the rest, but the text wouldn't focus.
"Congratulate.
Once again." The mailman must have lost the first one, he thought, but it didn't matter. "Your admission." He gave up and grinned at Hannah, who tiptoed in and leaned against the couch.
"I got in."
"To Harvard?"
James said, coming in from the kitchen. Nath nodded.
The letter got delivered to the wolves, he said, holding it out.
But James barely glanced at it. He was looking at Nath. And for once, he was not frowning. And Nath realized he had grown as tall as his father, that they could look at each other eye to eye.
Not bad,
James said. He smiled, as if half embarrassed, and put his hand on Nath's shoulder, and Nath felt it, heavy and warm, through his shirt.
Marilyn, guess what?
His mother's heels clattered in from the kitchen. Nath, she said, kissing him hard on the cheek. Nath, really? She plucked the letter from his grip. My God, class of 1981, she said. Doesn't that make you feel old, James? Nath wasn't listening. He thought, it's happening. I did it. I made it. I'm going. At the top of the stairs, Lydia watched her father's hand tighten on Nath's shoulder. She could not remember the last time he had smiled at Nath like that. Her mother held the letter to the light as if it were a precious document. Hannah, elbows hooked over the arm of the sofa, swung her feet in glee. Her brother himself stood silent, awed and grateful, 1981 glistening in his eyes like a beautiful, far-off star. And something wobbled inside Lydia and tumbled into her chest with a clang. As if they heard it, everyone looked up toward her. And just as Nath opened his mouth to shout out the good news, Lydia called, Mom, I'm failing physics. I'm supposed to let you know. That night, while Nath brushed his teeth, the bathroom door creaked open and Lydia appeared, leaning against the door jamb. Her face was pale, almost gray, and for a moment he felt sorry for her. Over dinner, their mother had moved from frantic questions. How could she let this happen? Didn't she realize? To blunt statements. Imagine yourself older and unable to find a job. Just imagine it. Lydia hadn't argued. And faced with her daughter's silence, Marilyn had found herself repeating that dire warning again and again. Do you think you'll just find a man and get married? Is that all you plan for your life? It had been all she could do to keep from crying right there at the table. After half an hour, James said, Marilyn, but she had glared so fiercely that he subsided, prodding shreds of pot roast in the separating onion soup gravy. Everyone had forgotten about Harvard, about Nath's letter, about Nath himself. After dinner, Lydia had found Nath in the living room. The letter from Harvard lay on the coffee table, and she touched the seal where it said, Veritas. Congratulations, she said softly. I knew you'd get in. Nath had been too angry to speak to her and fixed his eyes on the television screen, where Donnie and Marie were singing in perfect harmony. And before the song was over, Lydia had run upstairs to her room and slammed the door. Now, there she stood in the doorway, ashen and barefoot on the bathroom tiles. He knew what Lydia wanted now. For him to offer reassurance, a humiliation, a moment he'd rather forget, something to make her feel better. Mom will get over it. It will be okay. Remember when... But he didn't want to remember all the times his father had doted on Lydia but stared at him with disappointment flaring in his eyes. All the times their mother had praised Lydia but looked over and passed and through him, as if he were made of air. He wanted to savor the long-awaited letter, the promise of getting away at last, a new world waiting as white and clean as chalk. He spat fiercely into the sink without looking at her, swishing the last bit of froth down the drain with his fingers. Nath, Lydia whispered as he turned to go, and he knew by the tremble in her voice that she'd been crying, that she was about to begin again,
Good night, he said, and closed the door behind him. The next morning, Marilyn thumbtacked the failed test to the kitchen wall across from Lydia's seat. For the next 3 days, from breakfast until dinner, she plopped the physics book in front of her daughter and sat down beside her. All Lydia needed, she thought, was a little encouragement. Momentum and inertia, kinetic and potential, these things still lingered in the corners of her own mind. She read aloud over Lydia's shoulder. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. She worked through the failed test with Lydia again and again until Lydia could solve every problem correctly. What Lydia did not tell her mother was that by the third time through, she had simply memorized the right answers. All day, while she huddled over her physics book at the table, she waited for her father to intercede.
That's enough, Marilyn. It's Christmas break, for God's sake.
But he said nothing. Lydia had refused to speak to Nath since that night, as she thought of it. And she suspected, correctly, that he was angry at her as well. He avoided the kitchen entirely, except for meals. Even Hannah would have been some comfort. A small, silent buffer, but as usual, she was nowhere to be seen. In actuality, Hannah had planted herself under the end table in the foyer, just out of sight of the kitchen, listening to the scratch of Lydia's pencil. She hugged her knees and sent soft and patient thoughts. But her sister did not hear them. By Christmas morning, Lydia was furious at them all, and even the discovery that Marilyn had at last unpinned the test from the wall failed to cheer her up. Sitting down around the Christmas tree felt sullied now, too. James lifted one ribboned package after another from the pile, handing each around. But Lydia dreaded the gift from her mother. Usually her mother gave her books. Books that, although neither of them fully realized it, her mother secretly wanted herself, and which, after Christmas, Marilyn would sometimes borrow from Lydia's shelf. To Lydia, they were always too hard, no matter what age she was. Less presents than unsubtle hints. Last year, it was the Color Atlas of Human Anatomy, so large it wouldn't fit on the shelf upright. The year before, she had received a thick volume called Famous Women of Science. The famous women had bored her. Their stories were all the same, told they couldn't, decided to anyway. Because they really wanted to, she wondered, or because they were told not to. And the anatomy had made her queasy, men and women with their skin peeled off, then their muscles stripped away until they were nothing but skeletons laid bare. She'd flipped through some of the color plates and slammed the book and squirmed in her seat, as if she could shake off the feeling like a dog shook rain off its fur. Nath, watching his sister's eyes blink and redden, felt a twinge of pity cut through his anger. He had read the letter from Harvard 11 times now, and had finally convinced himself it was real. They had actually accepted him. In 9 months, he would be gone. And that knowledge took the sting out of all that had happened. So what if his parents cared more about Lydia's failure than his success? He was leaving. And when he got to college, Lydia would have to stay behind. The thought, finally put into words, was bittersweet. As his father passed him a present wrapped in red foil, Nath flashed Lydia a tentative smile, which she pretended not to see. After 3 comfortless days, she was not ready to forgive him yet. But the gesture warmed her, like a gulp of tea on a cold winter day. If she had not looked up at the ceiling just then, Lydia might have forgiven her brother after all. But something caught her eye, a Rorschach of white above their heads, and a tiny memory ballooned in her mind. They had been quite small. Her mother had taken Hannah to a doctor's appointment, and she and Nath, home alone,
had spotted a huge spider crawling just above the window frame. Nath had climbed the